All right, it is 6:30, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Planning Commission meeting tonight. We will start with number two on the agenda, public comments. This is for anybody who has a comment that isn't pertaining to one of the items on the agenda. Okay, seeing as there's none, we will move to agenda item number three, public hearing, consideration of a plat amendment to adjust property lines and vacate an existing public utility easement, property located approximately 822 South Eagle Point Drive, Carl Rupp as the applicant. And Mr. Rupp, are you here? Is Mr. Rupp? Yes, okay. All right, and we will turn it over to Mackenzie. Thank you for being here.
Today. Okay, so this application is a plat amendment to the Rupp subdivision, or Rupp PUD subdivision. That subdivision was approved by you guys in City Council last year. In 2013, a building permit was issued to construct an accessory structure on the property of 810 South Eagle Point Drive. At the time of construction and to present day, that is lot 1122 of the Eagle Point Estates Phase 11 subdivision. At the time the accessory structure was constructed, that property had the property to the back of it as well, and the accessory structure was constructed over the top of the property line. So, and we all missed that, when it came through for the Rupp PUD subdivision, Carl Rupp purchased that land and that lot as part of the new subdivision, making that accessory structure straddle two different subdivisions. So to clean that up and just make it so that structure can continue use and the new owners of the new subdivision lot know where their property lines are, they have submitted a plat amendment application. In addition to adjusting property lines, they have also requested to vacate the public utility easement that runs along the back end of lot 1122. We did send out notice to all of the utility companies that would be affected and received no negative feedback. And lot 1122 of the Eagle Point Estates Phase 11 subdivision will become part of Rupp PUD subdivision as lot 6. The Development Review Committee recommends approval of this plat amendment with no conditions.
Great, thank you. Seeing as this is a public hearing, should we do the public hearing first, or do we want to do our discussion first? Public hearing first. Okay. We will open the public hearing for any public comments on this consideration. If there's anyone here that wanted to make a public comment on this agenda item. Seeing as there's none, we will close the public hearing and move into commissioner discussion.
This is a question, and it goes to just general city process and things like that, and I think it's outside the purview of the Planning Commission, but ultimately, whose responsibility for the proper placement of like a foundation within a building lot such that there are setbacks? So for example, you know, 25 years ago, my neighbor built too close to the property line without the necessary setbacks. There was no, you know, no discovery of that till later when trying to put in a shed and trying to figure out what was going on. But anyway, who's ultimately responsible for proper placement of structures?
So when a structure is built, it's the responsibility of the builder to mark the property corners. In this particular case, the owners of lot 111, or 1112, is that the number? 1112?
Or 1122.
1122. They purchased, if you can see on this map, and I'll point here with the pointer, they actually purchased all of this all the way back along the section line, and they owned both parcels and had them taxed together, but they didn't join them together as they probably should have. It would have made it a lot cleaner. So when Mr. Rupp purchased the rear portion of that property, they meant to sell everything that was just behind the outbuilding that they built, but they used the wrong property description. They used the original property description from when they bought it from the previous owner, and they just, the title company missed it, the surveyor missed it, we missed it. There were several people that missed that property description was the wrong property description. So In the future, what we have done to change this in the for the future is when people come in and they own a portion of a piece of property or own a second property that they want to build on, we require them to do a plat amendment today so that we don't build across a property line and across a utility easement. So that's the process now. That wasn't the process then, and that's why it wasn't caught.
Thank you. And then my understanding too is if it's just simply an ordinary building lot with a structure being built in it, it's the builder's responsibility.
Any other comments or discussion? And Mackenzie, we're assuming that because we didn't hear back from any of the utilities, that isn't going to negatively impact anybody.
I did hear back from some of them, and they had over 14 days of notice period to provide comments if they were against it, just like any other plat amendment that we see. So everyone that I received, including like Kern River Gas, Dominion Energy, they were okay to vacate.
Excellent. Thank you.
So just one clarifying question. Sorry, this is Commissioner Moss. You still retain land ownership of the property behind this one, so no other landowners being affected. Is that correct? Okay.
Mr. Rupp, do you have any comments that you'd like to make to the commission? Are you're good? I just wanted to make sure we gave you a chance to talk if you had anything you wanted to say.
All right. So a year ago, this was all approved. And then we discovered that the engineers who surveyed it had put the property line through a guest home. And so basically this was all put to bed. And then because of that was discovered, it kind of brought this all up again, so I've had to jump through doing the Mylar and doing the survey and going to the Davis County and this meeting here and working out the issues with Jennifer and Roger Graves, who are here, and the individual that I sold the lot to. But it really did not it as far as you know, what was settled a year ago to now is a matter of moving a property line 20 feet, really. So that's kind of all, if that helps. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the commission? If not, we can move to a motion.
Yeah, I'm good with this. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval to the City Council of the plat amendment to adjust property lines and vacate an existing public utility easement on lots 1 and 2 of the Rupp PUD subdivision and lot 1122 of the Eagle Point Estates Phase 11 subdivision, located at approximately 822 South Eagle Point Drive, with no conditions.
Thank you. That's a motion by Commissioner Tucker. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Commissioner Ward with the second. And any discussion or comment on the motion from any commissioners? All in favor say aye.
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 And the motion carries. Great. Thank you. I hope everything is smooth sailing for you moving forward. And thank you for doing all these legal steps to get that taken care of. Best of luck to you. Okay, we will move to agenda item number 4, consideration of a concept plan for a come and go store subdivision located at 1096 North Redwood Road. Nate Abbott as the applicant, and is Mr. Abbott present today? Yes.
I'm standing
in for Nate. Okay, what was your name?
Christian Michelson.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Mr. Michelson. And we'll turn it over to Mackenzie.
Okay. So this is a concept plan application for the Come and Go subdivision. That name is not going to stay. He actually sent me a different name today. I just haven't had time to check with Davis County. So do know the name will change, the use will not. The property of 1096 North Redwood Road is approximately 5.12 acres in zone general commercial currently. The applicant is requesting to subdivide that property into two separate lots, each of which will be compliant with the general commercial code regarding lot width and also minimum size and acreage. Lot one will be accessible from Redwood Road if they receive permission from UDOT and 1100 North, and then lot two will only be accessible from 1100 North. Lot one, I'm actually gonna go to this one, is to be used as a convenience store and gas station called Come and Go. The city has received a rezone application for what is going to be lot two to take it from general commercial to manufacturing distribution. The reason for this is it is in the direct flight path of the Sky Park Airport. And because of that, the FAA has specific regulations that this building use owners all have to follow in addition to city code. So the FAA's listed uses that are permissible at that location are more cohesive and comparable to what we have in our MD zone. So by rezoning that, it will allow better use of the property. This application is not for the rezone today. That will come at the same time as the preliminary and final plat review. But do be aware that is something that we will be working towards, and we have received the rezone application. It's just not ready to be brought forward yet. If it is rezoned from general commercial to manufacturing distribution, it will still be compliant with minimum lot size and width. So the applicant is working with city staff on getting the plat fixed up so that it's going to be ready to rock and roll for final plat approval, and then also their preliminary plan that will be ready to go, I mean, come time for site plan even. We've been going back and forth with them on red lines. This is the initial draft, so don't be alarmed when you don't see parking islands and the typical things that we call out. We have already addressed those. This is just the first iteration as a concept. So the applicant is requesting advice and just some guidance from the Planning Commission regarding driveways. City Code 10-6-2 requires that each driveway not be more than 40 feet wide measured at right angles to the center line of the driveway, except as increased by permissible curb return radii or established by conditional use permit from you guys. So the reason for this is the use of Come and Go is going to be catered to in some ways to larger trucks and trailers, and they require a larger turning radius in order to enter and leave safely. Come and Go is requesting that we consider increasing the permitted width to 59 feet on 1100 North and 50.5 feet on Redwood Road. They will have a second driveway on Redwood or on 1100, but that will be catered more towards passenger vehicles, and that's the one on the west side.
So they're still asking for two driveways on 1100 North. So one would be at the 40 and one would be at the 59?
Yes. Yeah, and that's the last thing that I thought we agreed to. Are we still on board with that? Okay. Yeah, so the one to the west is more for passenger type vehicles, and so that one can be the minimum or maximum of 40 feet. It's the one coming off of Redwood Road, and then the one on the east side of the property on 1100, they would like to increase, because if you see on the east side of the property, they have truck and trailer parking, and then on the south side, they have fuel pumps for trucks. So it'll just make a slick, easy way for them to maneuver in and out of the property. The northwest one is not, I guess it could be used.
On 1100? Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought it, so it's.
Am I saying it wrong? I do that. I'm notorious for getting my east-west wrong.
No, you're saying it right.
Okay.
The one closest to the intersection would be for passenger cars.
Yeah, or, right. I mean, a truck can use either.
Right.
That's how it's going to work. Right. But it will be more used by passenger vehicles. And so we've all, we being the applicant and their engineering team, and then city staff and our engineer have come to the agreement that that one doesn't necessarily need to be that large because the other two will be the ones that are used for flow of traffic. Does that make sense?
Will they be labeled as such? That
we could. We could do wayfinding. We did that over at the Maverick just down the road on Center Street.
I mean, it doesn't work, but it could.
Well, I mean, is there, just out of curiosity, is there actually a reason that a semi would use the westmost entrance on 1100 North?
Can't.
Probably so not. Why not? Can I offer an opinion?
I think that would be more for exiting. Yes, Ron. Oh, and before you ask, I also included a statement straight from the applicant. They also added in information as to why they are requesting this ask. One of those reasons being that Come and Go has a standard driveway that is 40 feet anyways, and then fire code and all sorts of other things that they found in constructing over 400 stores, this has been the least problematic for them. But I just wanted to make sure I touched on that part before we get too carried away. What was your question, Ron?
I think we need to be accommodating on the desire for additional driveway widths. And I think, you know, despite the fact that you mark it one way or the other, if someone's unfamiliar with that station, say they're passing through and they've got a trailer, an RV, whatever behind, they pull into whatever one they're going to pull into. And, you know, to have it wider would be better rather than have them shortcut that and get up on this curbing thing that they have or whatever. Anyway, so I'm actually having somebody drives a trailer and going into lots of unfamiliar gas stations. I just think that accommodating the wider driveways is the right thing to do.
So you would say the commission would entertain having all three driveways be referencing?
That's your preference. That's my personal opinion because, again, I think you could be coming, you're not familiar with the area, you could be coming south on Redwood Road. You think, I'm not going to cross all the busy road to go into the exit on Redwood Road, so I'm going to turn on 1100 North, and then just instinctively turn in the first one. Well, if that one's more narrow, that may be problematic. So anyway, I don't think the width of the driveway is going to, I mean, this is going to be a betterment. This is going to be a better use of the property. And frankly, I just think we need to be accommodating on that for safety's sake.
Well, and to reiterate, the Planning Commission does have the power to allow these guys to go over 40 feet on all of these driveways. Staff just worked back and forth with them to find a compromise because we didn't know how much to ask for at first, but if you guys were willing to entertain that.
Right. And thank you, Ron, for your comment. Let's let Mackenzie finish I think we have a lot of comments that are going to come in, so let's let you get to your end point, and then we'll move into the full discussion here.
The DRC recommends approval of the concept plan for a two-lot subdivision with no conditions.
You're here. All right. Sorry. Now we will move into full discussion.
Okay, this is Commissioner Stone. I have a question about, is anything going to change in the intersection around this gas station? Just because, like, if it's big semis going, I imagine there's going to be a lot turning south onto Redwood, right, to get on and off 215. And so I just know that on 1100 North or 26 South, whatever that street is, especially that left turn, like there's no middle lane that can get really congested at times. I just wondered if there is consideration for like research going into like what the circulation will be around there with a gas station with lots of semis going in and out. And maybe it's similar to the Maverick more south. I don't know.
It's a very good question. That right and left turn coming off of Redwood Road when cars are lined up on 1100 North is already very, very hairy, and often trucks have to re-maneuver to be able to make those turns. I know, because I live there, so I see it happen all the time.
Yeah.
That right, the right turn and the left turn there are problematic for the cars in the left turning lane on
going onto Redwood. Yeah.
Yeah.
We will consult with the city engineer. I'm not sure what the plans are for widening that or restriping it, but we certainly will have him look at that and get back with us. And when we come back for preliminary and final approval, we'll have some information for you on that. Thanks for bringing that up.
Just to clarify, it's 1100 North.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Well, the car's sitting in the left turn lane often get pinched there by semis both turning in left and trying to make that right turn lane. And you can see the fire, the street pole right there has been hit countless times. Yeah.
And so I wonder also, like, because I imagine if there's a wider driveway closer to the intersection, like, it's going to be really hard to turn left really close to the intersection. So you'd want, do you know what I mean? So you'd want to take the one that's a little bit further down, especially if you're a semi. I mean, I don't know. It just seems really hairy right there without a.
Commissioner Stone's being nice about it, but I don't like that second intersection that close to Redwood at all. I would very much be in favor of widening the other two, but that one by not only. Would I get rid of that entrance? I would consider a median on 1100 North to prohibit left turns.
Yes.
Okay. That's confusing.
it's backed up like crazy all the time. The truck traffic that's already there contributes to it. This is going to add to it. And I see the situation. I mean, I've been driving Center Street every school day for 10 years, and they have that problem at Maverick with those route with those accesses marked, but they're not honored.
Yeah. So they currently own the whole property and want to subdivide it, I'm assuming, to sell off lot two.
Yeah, and lot two, I've actually already. Lot two, the rezone application that came through came from a completely different entity. So some development group, do you guys remember their name for the second lot?
Right
Development Group are the ones that are looking at lot two to purchase, and then also they're wanting right now some sort of flex space, but that is very conceptual. I don't know what they are fully planning to do.
So I feel like the driveway situation is very, very hairy here on both of these roads being already very problematic with the truck traffic that is there as it is. And so I feel like in order for them to have the driveway frontage that they need on 1100 North, that they need to utilize the back half of that lot and move some of those driveways down. I feel like adding these driveways so close to the intersection, both one on Redwood Road and one on 1100 North, I feel like it's trying to squish too much onto this property, and the driveways are very problematic. There's not a lot of lot space to widen these as it is without having it be just all driveway frontage. So I think either it's one large driveway on 1100 North, not a small one and a large one, or rezoning the back half and spreading this all out, particularly since this specific gas station caters to semi-trucks. It looks very, very problematic to me with the access, the need to get accommodations for the driveways, and already the way that that intersection runs, it feels very problematic to me.
Is there a way to the westernmost exit, right turn only exiting the come and go?
There may be, but I do want to just point out that their entire frontage on 1100 North, just for this lot, not for the other lot, is 329 feet. So this scale may
it looks smaller be descent. Than it is.
It may be deceptive. They're about 100 and maybe 100, 110 feet away from the intersection with that first.
But if that's only two semis.
I just wanted to let you know that that's what the scale is, because I know it could be deceiving.
But if they're asking to increase the 40 foot here by to 50 and then the back one to 59, that is, and then all of those cars are trying to get in and out off of 1100 North, which is not a three lane intersection there anyway. It just feels like it's, that intersection is already a problem, and there's no traffic coming from this corner, is my personal opinion.
Chair Larson, the applicant would like to say something.
Come on up, okay, Mr. Michelson. If you just state your name in the microphone so that our meetings.
You bet. I'm Christian Michelson with Galloway. I'm the civil engineer for the project. I just wanted to, I think Commissioner Tucker had a pretty good point there. I think it would not be against what we're trying to accomplish here to have a right in, right out on that northwest entry. Primarily, the cars using that are going to be coming from the west in the morning, coming in, getting what they need, and heading back out and turning right. And we've had some pretty extensive discussions with Paul Otteson about purposefully not cutting into that road. I think the city's made a pretty substantial investment in that road, and we're trying ever so hard to not destroy that. So I think a right-in, right-out via sign would be probably your best option there. And so that would be my suggestion over a center turn median or anything like that. And then the other thing I was going to tell you is signage is great, but as a former commercial truck driver myself, people do tend to take their cues from width. It's what's called a shy distance. That's why when you're driving along the road and you have like some of those concrete barriers that kind of close in on you or define a lane, you tend to slow down. People sense what's called shy distance pretty accurately. And most trained commercial truck drivers are going to look at those entries and they're going to know right away, I'm going to go to the second one and turn there. And so I don't think you're going to have as many issues as you think. There's always issues with new traffic patterns when you open up a new facility or something. But once people kind of get the hang of how it all flows, it tends to work out pretty well if it's laid out well. So, and then I'd be happy to field any other questions if you have any.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think the issue necessarily that I foresee is people going in. I think it's people exiting. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's the people trying to turn, because there will be significant amount of people trying to go left, no matter what exit it is, trying to go left, either whether it be onto Redwood or onto 1100 North. And I think that left turn, whichever exit it is problematic. Mm-hmm.
Do we need to address the rezone too? Or do you want to just keep talking about that?
Sherry, do we need to address the rezone today or wait until that application is on the agenda?
No, it's not on the agenda, so you can't address the rezone. And the site plan really isn't on the agenda either. So this is just concept plan for...
So we're here just to discuss the driveways.
Not even to discuss the driveways. They're just asking you that question ahead of time. Is that something that you would consider is the widening of the driveways? And I think that they got a positive reaction from you towards that application. But for now, what we're doing is the concept plan, and then the next step in the subdivision will be preliminary and final plat at the same time, because they can be processed at the same time, but concept can't be processed at the same time. So when you're looking at this process, we usually have, when we do a concept, when we think about a subdivision and our subdivision ordinance, we think about a big subdivision with homes and lots of lots. This is just such a minor subdivision. We really should have a minor subdivision process, so it would be just one meeting with the Planning Commission and one with the City Council. But because we have to apply the same ordinances to small subdivisions and large subdivisions, we have to come forward with the concept plan. Then we go and come back to you with the preliminary and final when we have ironed all these out. So it's great that we're putting all of these issues on the table right now, and we can take them back to our engineer and work with their engineer to make sure that the design is right. We'll find out what the engineer's recommendation and also UDOT's recommendation, mm-hmm. because as part of getting UDOT's approval for their change of use and their access, UDOT may just very well say that second entrance is too close, or it's not far, you know, it needs to be a little further away, or it needs to be right in, right out on that one. We don't really know what UDOT is going to say on that one yet.
So does this concept look plausible for this location?
Yes.
Okay.
Do these two lots meet the minimum standards?
And UDOT will be weighing in on the 1100 North side as well?
So because they haven't, because they're weighing in on the Redwood Road access, but they look at the entire property and they'll look at the way that access is that intersection, and they have rules back so many feet from their intersection that they can't have driveways. Even if it's not 1100 North is our road, it's not UDOT's road, they still have rules for their intersection as to how far away the driveways have to be on our road. That makes sense.
Understood. Thank you.
So the right in, right out that was being referred to would be on that smaller driveway on 1100 North. Is that correct? Meaning that, you can right turn in and you can right turn out, and that's it.
Yes, that okay. could be a...
Oh, that's better.
Because if you were turning left out, you might want to go down to the southern right, the exit one, yeah. if you're going to go south on Redwood Road. If you're going to go north on Redwood Road, I'd probably still go to the south exit.
Right.
And then if you're... generally speaking, I would think that most people who are either going to go north or south on Redwood Road would go to the south exit. The people who are going to go out to the freeway to I-15 are going to be turning right. I don't know why you would turn left out of
just
the
because
smaller
Redwood
driveway.
Is like several lanes, so sometimes it's better to have a light. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're turning left onto Redwood from there.
Right. But if you're turning,
I mean, that's the reason I think behind people would want to get the light.
They may, but they
but
may
But you're
not.
Right, yeah.
Because of the timing of the light, you can usually wait till that light turns red, and then you could still get out, because that would stop the traffic at Redwood Road. And that intersection, this is a really big lot. That south
yeah,
driveway
that
is really
sense.
Far away from that intersection.
So on the agenda tonight, though, is just deciding if we are going to subdivide this property regardless of land use.
Yes.
So really, we do not need to discuss the gas station at all.
Correct.
Okay.
But they are seeking guidance so that when they come for the preliminary and final, they're not shocked when you guys say, no, we're not going to approve this with these driveways. They
okay.
want to know ahead of time so they can do their groundwork and we can work with them to make sure we're doing it the way you guys want to approve it.
Okay, because I think that we should make that very clear, that if we're just talking about subdividing the properties, does it meet the minimum standard?
Yes.
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 But are we willing to let them utilize that property in the way that they presented tonight with the driveways as they are? Maybe no. Does that seem fair, that the discussion we need to have? Okay.
And I guess I would summarize the guidance that I'm hearing is that we have in the code a certain driveway width, but we would set that aside and do what makes the best sense for the traffic flow. That's what, so we don't be concerned with what the code says, just come back with the driveway plan that makes the best sense.
And is safest, and by that you mean increasing the width of those driveways.
Increase or decrease, whatever that they think, you know, and whatever what believes is the best for the use.
Well, it doesn't sound like anyone has an argument over the west entrance and the
south.
Northeast entrance can be as wide. No one's concerned about that. It's the northwest entrance that is a debate.
But they're not asking to widen that driveway in particular. But they could if that makes more sense. And we can have them show us an analysis of the turning radiuses and with trucks that I've seen those drawings that the engineers do. I'm sure they, yeah.
Truck turning template.
Yeah, if anything, if we kept that the northwest one, I mean, I don't see any reason why it couldn't be narrower, because then we'd only need two lanes if we were right in, right out.
Yeah.
That would even dissuade trucks from using it even
more.
But I absolutely would want to widen the other one, because I've seen trucks go over those curbs too many times. I agree with that.
We lost power twice down there at Maverick for trucks hitting that power pole that's right near the the entrance.
Yeah, they put a piece of temporary barrier in front of it, and one time I saw that barrier leaning against the power pole.
Okay, I guess we can start with a straw poll about the subdivide. Does anyone have any comments about the subdivide? Any issues with the subdivide? Okay. Okay, so that looks like that way is going to be smooth in a motion. which I think is really the only motion we need to make tonight, is the subdivision. And then with the recommendation of we would be potentially willing to bypass some of the city codes in the driveway widths and sizes in order to make it function the best in that corner.
Yes, and to clarify, we're not bypassing codes. It's a conditional use.
Conditional
use. So it's just the same way we would treat a business that comes through. It's a conditional use that can be granted by the Planning Commission if we find cause.
Precision in language. So. Thank you, Mackenzie.
I guess if we're, this is Commissioner Moss, looking to recommend approval of the full concept plan that includes the subdivision, but in my, as I read that, it also kind of makes me think that we're recommending this initial concept plan as well. And I guess I have a little bit of discomfort recommending approval of that as is. I'd love a little bit more information about how it might affect the traffic flow. And so I'm totally good with the, if approval of the concept plan means the subdivision of the lot, totally fine with that. But I'm a little bit, I would like a little bit more information on that, I guess, if I'm looking to also recommend approval of that sheet.
No, it does not recommend approval of the concept plan for the site plan. It's just the concept plan the two-lot subdivision. That's the only matter before you tonight.
Okay,
it's a little confusing because the subdivision has the same name as the business. But like if the motion as it is presented is the concept plan for the come-and-go subdivision. It's just this. Just this that we see.
Which is why we asked them to rename the subdivision to something more generic.
No, it is very confusing. It's been confusing to me too, Commissioner Moss.
Thank you. That makes a ton of sense.
So, Mr. Michelson, it looks like the commission is getting close to being ready to make a motion to the concept plan for the subdivision. Is there anything that you would like from us to make it clearer to you what is problematic to us so that potentially that what you have in mind is going to pass through easier or quicker, because it seems also that commissioners up here have some concerns about the potential concept of the business that you have put forth.
Yeah, we will be doing a traffic impact statement, and so we're happy to give that to the city and submit that with everything, and it's pretty robust. We do all our traffic engineering in-house, so we'll be analyzing that. We'll submit that, and then yeah, we would certainly appreciate as much, you know, of a point in the right direction as you can give us tonight. We put a lot of work in up front to coordinate so that, you know, things are easier on the back end. We're not making a bunch of changes late in the project. And so I think one of the things that Mackenzie asked me to write a statement on that, and one of the things that I would say too is that the radii on those approaches are basically designed with the minimum inside turning radius for a fire apparatus in mind as well. So I mean, you'll see some truck stops that have, you know, a 60-foot turning radius, but these are not that extreme, and so we're basically just looking to convey truck traffic, you know, and cars in and out of the project safely, making sure everyone has good access, clear lines of sight, etc. So that's all I have, unless you have a question.
Great, thank you. Does anyone on the commission have any guidance information that they'd like to relay today to Mr. Michelson moving forward?
I think I'd probably just reiterate, I wouldn't have an issue with widening those driveways at all if we saw a conditional use permit.
And again, I think this would be a significant betterment on the use of that project. Obviously, you want to get it right in terms of any traffic impacts and the right ways to turn in and out of the property. I do think accommodating the wider widths the right thing to do. If we have the right in, right out only on the one, whatever the solution is to make it work, that's fine. But I would point out that it will be a betterment, and it's not atypical to have service stations on the corner of busy roads just like this. These are two of the major roads. So it seems to me that as long as you get it right. But you can drive around, you see plenty of service stations where they have the tanker truck trying to fill the station and some screwy thing blocking half the parking lot. So, you know, a whole lot of service stations that haven't put a lot of thought into that.
And from a staff's perspective, we're really excited to have that horrible, all old building gone.
Yeah. You don't love that building?
Also, just so you guys know, I've heard multiple people reference the use of the property. When it does come time, this will be a permitted use. Convenience stores and gas stations are permitted in the CG zone. Mm-hmm. So when we do get to the point after conceptual, when we come up for preliminary and final, we'll have a better idea of how the layout will form, and then they still have to come back for site plan before they can get a building permit. So you have multiple times between now and the actual construction of the lot to make any tweaks and that kind of thing. And we are working hard, and these guys have been awesome to get us any red lines and things like that. So
thank you, Mackenzie. And also, we would be getting the information from UDOT before those decisions and the traffic study too, I'm assuming.
We're submitted to UDOT right now.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, if the commission is feeling settled in the discussion, we can move to a motion if anyone's ready to do that.
I'll make a motion. This is Commissioner Moss. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval to the City Council of the concept plan for the Come and Go subdivision located at 1096 North Redwood Road with no conditions.
Thank you, and do we have a second?
Second, Commissioner Jorgensen.
Thank you, and any discussion or comment on the motion?
We're not locking them into a subdivision name, are we? I mean, do we want to state that, or whatever the subdivision ends up being named?
What was the question?
By making a motion with the current subdivision name, we're not locking them into that or anything.
No, we're not locking them into that. We will. We just need to make sure that we note them in the file when the name changes. So we're pretty good at that. We've done that several times. I think Carl Rupp went through several different names because he proposed names, and then we would check with the county, and we're like, oh, okay, we already have, you know, five subdivisions that say Lakeview something, Eagle something. So he had to change his twice because he kept picking names that were already used in other cities.
And they did submit a potential name this afternoon. I just didn't have time to check it. And it is a lot more broad than what it is right now, as in not as specific.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion or comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And the motion carries. All right, thank you, Mr. Michelson, for being here, and thank you for your input, and best of luck to you, that all the traffic surveys go well, and thank you for rebounding some of our questions today.
Thank you. Appreciate your input.
All right, we will move to agenda item number 5, Training Open and Public Meetings Act.
So just to give you a little bit of background on this, the state code requires that once a year all of the city's committees or boards, anything that's formed by resolution or ordinance, anybody has to go through an Open and Public Meetings Act training. It has to be done once a year. They're measured on a fiscal year, so prior to the audit we had to have this. We had several discussions with city staff. How should we do this? Should we do an in-person training with the City Council and the Planning Commission and the Golf Committee and the Health and Wellness Committee and the Parks and Arts Committee? There might be some other ones, but we decided that this year, in the name of timeliness, we found this video from the State Auditor's Office. It's about 8 minutes long, 7 minutes and 53 seconds. The chief of police informed us today that's how much it was, 7:53. Anyway, we will just watch this, and then I'll give you a brief, just my thoughts on it, and you can ask me any questions that you have about the Open and Public Meetings Act.
Is this the don't curse at people or yell at anybody training?
This is don't talk about things that are inappropriate. No, I don't. Watch it. You'll see.
So what's the Open and Public Meetings Act? It's the state law that ensures government actions and deliberations are openly conducted. Before we continue, keep in mind that this video is an overview, and exceptions may exist based on your entity type. So what's considered an open and public meeting? It's when a governing body majority meets to discuss or act upon government business. It includes the meetings sometimes referred to as workshops or executive sessions. Regular meetings, public hearings, electronic meetings, and emergency meetings are all open and public meetings. Open and public meetings don't include chance or social meetings. A public hearing is a type of open and public meeting where citizens have a reasonable opportunity to speak. public hearings happen when a government adopts a budget or imposes or increases taxes or fees. An electronic meeting is a type of open and public meeting that's convened electronically, such as via phone or the internet. Remember, the governing body must adopt a resolution, rule, or ordinance allowing and governing electronic meetings. An open and public meeting may be closed to discuss any of the following: a person's character, competence, or health, security personnel, devices, or systems deployment, collective bargaining, litigation, purchase, sale, or lease of property if an open discussion would prevent the entity from completing the transaction on the best terms, investigations of criminal misconduct, and private or protected information per the Utah Procurement Code, including trade secrets. Two-thirds of the governing body need to vote yes to close a meeting. Quick math lesson. 2 divided by 3 equals 66.7%. Let's say your governing body has 5 members. If 3 out of the 5 members vote yes, that equals 60%, which is not equal to or greater than 66.7%, which means you're 1 member short and instead need 4 out of 5 members to vote yes. During a closed meeting, a governing body can't interview someone applying to fill an elected position, discuss filling a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, discuss the character, competence, or health of a person whose name was submitted for consideration to fill a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, or approve any ordinance, resolution, rule, regulation, contract, or appointment. If a closed meeting is discussing a person's character, competence, or health, or security personnel, devices, or systems deployment, no recording or minutes are required. However, the presiding member needs to sign a sworn written statement stating such. If the closed meeting is held for any other reason, a recording must be made. Emergency meetings may be held to discuss an urgent matter due to unforeseen circumstances. In order to hold the meeting, the best notice that's feasible is provided of the time, location, and topics to be considered. An attempt is made to contact all governing body members, and the governing body majority approves the meeting. Entities that hold regular meetings need to provide notice at least annually of the year's meeting schedule. As always, the notice must include date, time, and place. For entities that don't hold regularly scheduled regular meetings, 24 hours notice must be provided. All meetings, whether regularly scheduled in advance over the course of the year or scheduled as needed, must provide no less than 24 hours notice of meeting agendas. If a public hearing is held, public notice requirements change. Make sure to distinguish between regular meeting notice requirements and public hearing notice requirements. For regular meetings, an entity is only required to notify a newspaper and doesn't need to pay to publish a notice. For public hearings, notice must be published in at least one issue of a newspaper. If a newspaper of general circulation isn't available, written notice is posted in 3 public places within the entity's boundaries. Regular meetings require 24 hours notice. Public hearings require 7 days notice. For both regular meetings and public hearings, written notice must be posted at the principal office of the governing body, or, if no such office exists, at the building where the meeting will be held. Governing bodies must also provide notice of open and public meetings on the Public Notice website at publicnotice.utah.gov. By posting on the website and providing the email of the local newspaper, governing bodies can also meet the requirement to notify a newspaper. However, other requirements such as publishing in a newspaper still apply. Typically, posting on the public notice website is done by the records officer, recorder, or clerk. However, it's the governing body's responsibility to ensure notice is provided. State Archives has prepared a training manual and quick guide for owners and posters, as well as training videos that can be accessed at their website at archives.utah.gov. If your entity is increasing a fee or undergoing truth in taxation for a property tax increase, be aware that there are additional notice and posting requirements. Public meeting agendas need to include reasonably specified topics to be considered, with each topic listed under a separate agenda item on the meeting agenda. The governing body may not consider a topic in an open meeting that wasn't on the agenda. If a new topic not on the agenda is raised by the public during an open meeting, the governing body may discuss the topic. However, final action may not be taken on the new topic during that meeting. Meeting minutes and an audio recording are required for all open meetings, with limited exceptions. When an open or closed meeting is required to be recorded, it must be unedited and contain all the portions of the meeting. Recordings of open meetings must be made available within 3 days. Every entity needs to establish procedures for the governing body's approval of minutes. Pending minutes are written minutes prepared in draft form and are subject to change before being approved by the governing body. Pending minutes must contain a clear indication, such as a draft or pending watermark, that the governing body hasn't yet approved the minutes and that they're subject to change. Pending minutes must be made available within 30 days. Approved minutes are written minutes of a meeting that have been approved by the governing body. Approved minutes are the official record of the meeting and must be made available within 3 business days. Whoever is responsible for taking the minutes during meetings, typically the records officer, recorder, or clerk, needs to be familiar with what OPMA requires be contained in the minutes. When a governing body closes a meeting, the following must be publicly announced and entered into the minutes of the open meeting at which the closed meeting was approved. The reason or reasons for holding the closed meeting, the location where the closed meeting will be held, and the vote of each member of the governing body either for or against the motion to close the meeting. The recording and any minutes must include the date, time, and location of the meeting, the names of the governing body members present and absent, and the names of all others present except where disclosure would infringe on the confidentiality necessary to fulfill the original purpose of closing the meeting.
For more information, access our local government resource center at resources.auditor.utah.gov.
There's a couple of things in that that were wrong because our legislature always changes the state code, right? So this last year they changed it so we don't have to advertise public hearings in a newspaper anymore because newspapers aren't even really, do you any of you know somebody who goes and reads the legal section every week to find out if there's any public hearings? Most people would go to the Utah Public Notice website or go to the city's website to view those notices. So that is no longer a requirement. And now my brain has gone completely blank on the other, some of the timing of those notices, the 7 days and 10 days, it's mostly 10 days for anything that you would do there. And the other thing was that there would really be no reason for a planning commission to ever go into a closed session to discuss anything. You don't do any collective bargaining with unions. You don't negotiate the purchase or sale of city property. Right. You don't go in. Yeah, you don't do any of that type of thing. Those are things that the city council would do. And then the public hearings that you do that usually come to you and not to planning commission have something to do with the changing of our ordinances, our land use ordinance. And that's actually a 10-day notice, not a 7-day notice like that said in here. So just some of those things. But be aware that we know what the rules are. We make sure that your agendas are posted properly. We make sure that at the beginning of each year we bring to you the meeting schedule for the year with all of the dates of our regular meetings. We can always add an extra meeting on some other night if we do something. We just follow the rules for posting additional meetings. And do you have any other questions about open and public meetings? Well, Mackenzie does most of that for me, along with Wendy, the city recorder. And I did want to tell you about the Utah Public Notice website. It is a good thing, but I don't really know how many people use it. When they first developed it, the idea that I was told was that citizens could go to the Utah Public Notice website and actually sign up for notices from your community, and they would just automatically get them if that was something they wanted. Or they could type in keywords, and anytime something came up with, like, say they typed up zoning change, that anytime this jurisdiction had something that said zoning change on the agenda, then they would get a notice. I don't think it works that way. I haven't been able to find anybody or find any way to do it that way, but people can go there and look at the notices. But we also post them on our website, so we're required to put them on the public notice website. We're required to put them on our website and required to post them in the building here. There are some things that we are required to do direct notice to, like if we're going to rezone your property or we're rezoning your neighbor's property, we have to mail you a letter. So we don't just rely on posting of those agendas and notices. There are other notice requirements that we meet based on state code and based on what's in our code, particularly for those things. So that's open in public meetings.
Thank you.
And we can have a summer barbecue again, because that is a social gathering, not a meeting. We just, when we're at that meeting, we can't discuss anything. And that was really fun last year, I just want to say it. Mackenzie really wants to come to this year's.
COVID.
All right, thank you.
Okay, never mind.
Number six, city council report.
Yes. So last week, the city council approved the water conservation landscape ordinance. After much discussion, they put the requirement back in for some vegetative material in the park strip. But the compromise was that street trees would be given credit for that coverage. So the way we calculated it was based on our street tree list. We have small trees, we have medium trees, and we have large trees. So I went through and I looked at a 25-foot section of park strip on an average park strip. I drew on it what the canopy is for a mature tree in each of the sizes, and then looked at how many square feet that tree would shade. And then, so for small trees, we're giving credit for 50 square feet, medium 75, and large trees are 100 square feet. And then basically what that does is one tree for every 25 feet meets your requirement for the 1/3 vegetative material. That's how it should work out. I'm hopeful that I did the math right.
You did.
But that is essential. In essential, we are now compliant and our citizens can apply for the flip your strip rebates with Weaver Basin Water.
That's
and
great.
They were very complimentary on the thought process, especially on our maximum 6,500 square feet or 5,000 square feet or the percentage of the lot. They gave me a comment on that and said that they really appreciated the amount of thought that we put into that process and that it exceeded their standards, and they really are supportive of that and thanked us for that. So they're very excited to see some things happen and some water conservation going on in North Salt Lake. So
great.
We did it.
Thank you.
So
Sharon,
I have a question.
Yes.
The canopy sizes you talked about, because those weren't talked about at city council, how is that how does that go into place? Like, because what they voted for at city council wasn't specific.
Yeah, we didn't
sizes.
Yeah, they didn't specifically tell me a number, but that's what I was. They were giving me the direction to calculate what it was, and that's what I calculated the average would be.
I see.
So that it would be fair. And if it doesn't work out, we will come back and change that. But that was how I was directed to go on that.
And then what does Weber offer for city property that has park strip?
So my understanding is that the city can apply for the rebate just the same as any citizen could. I think if we did ours, we probably wouldn't apply for that, because we would want to not take money away from our citizens who could benefit better. But I I'm really excited, and I want to talk to the city council about doing the park strip here on Center Street, as well as the park strip on Main Street for this side of the building, because when you look at it, we have zero scape behind the sidewalk, and then we have like a 4-foot strip of grass in the park. It just doesn't make any sense why we didn't do zero scape in the in the park strip there too. So
there's that whole stretch along Highway 89.
So we got it on three sides too.
Yeah.
I think is a project that we're going to propose to the city council as a showpiece, because if we can do something to demonstrate
That's a good idea.
What can be done for water conservation? I think this is a good opportunity. Yeah. Now, we are going to be having a project here on Main Street. They're coming in to replace a water line, and there may be disturbance of the curb and some of that landscaping, and that's the perfect opportunity for us to take that grass out and put it back in with something that uses less water. So I'm going to encourage that.
Great.
That is all I have for you from the City Council.
Thank you. And the approval of the minutes. Does anyone have any comments on the minutes? And thank you to Andrea for her work on the minutes. They always look so great and capture our discussion so well. So anybody that has any corrections or comments on the minutes? And if not, we can do a motion.
I'll make a motion. This is Commissioner Moss. I move to approve the Planning Commission minutes from May 24th, 2022 with no changes.
Thank you. And do we have a second?
Second, Commissioner Holbrook.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, approval of the minutes done. And then, Sherry, is our next meeting canceled on the 28th?
Yes, for the primary election. They'll be using this building. So we will not be having a second June meeting, but okay. We will see you in July.
Just wanted to clarify that.
And maybe in July we can think about a summer barbecue for August.
Do you want to mention the form-based code?
At Bill's house.
Oh, and I wanted to just give you an update on the form-based code. We were supposed to work on two chapters tonight for the form-based code, but being scheduling like it was and working on that ordinance as much time as it took, that basically we ran out of time on getting those two chapters ready. So we're going to try to get all of the chapters ready in the next month for your meeting in July, but we may push them out and have two at the first meeting in July and two at the second meeting in July. That's our plan, but if we get ahead, then we will certainly bring them sooner.
And if you get one done, you can send it out to us early, you know?
Yeah.
Even though we aren't having a meeting in 2 weeks, you could send it to us and we can then go over it. And
when I sat down with Allie and we were working on chapters 2 and 7, because it was the streets and can't remember.
Parking
and streets. And frankly, as we were reading through it, we were like, this is kind of a hot mess.
Yeah.
We're not sure that we really need some of these things that are in here and what we were thinking about it 2 years ago when we first were looking at it. Now we're kind of going, not really sure how this applies, and maybe we need to rethink the way that the streets section is entirely written. Some of those cross sections aren't even applicable anymore because we've changed what the BRT route is going to be. It's not going to be a fixed guyway. It's not going to be a lane separation for the, it's going to be in traffic flow. So that changes our cross section.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of work that we have to do on that. And it was just a little bit overwhelming for us last week as we sat down and we're trying to get it done. And
it's a lot.
I was like, this is a hot mess. I really don't feel confident taking this to the Planning Commission and saying, sorry, we don't like this, but we're going to bring it to you anyway. We thought it would be better to wait.
Well, we appreciate that, not having it brought until we're actually ready to do it. So, and thank you for all your work on that. That is a lot of work. Okay, and with that, we are adjourned.